Now Jeff Blair can tell you bedtime stories. Subscribe to podcasts of The Jeff Blair Show at iTunes or with your favorite podcatcher and listen anytime you want. Sweet dreams. Sportsnet 590 The Fan on demand. Being a sports nerd has never been so cool. Hey, speak of the nerd, here's one of our nerdiest, sportiest sports nerds now. Jeff Blair's on the air with The Jeff Blair Show on Toronto Sports Radio. Sportsnet 590 The Fan.
Welcome back to the Jeff Blair Show. I want to thank Kevin Barker for bringing in the Timbits.
He's a great, great man.
Timbits are good for your throat. I have the special medicinal Timbits. See, I got a problem with Timmy's, though. I got to say this.
What?
Well, by the way, you know that I won a $100 card.
I know.
Well, I've been sitting at home fighting life and death to get my voice back. You guys have been draining the $100 Tim Hortons card that I won.
We've been doing our best.
Roll up the rim. I know what you guys are like.
Darn right.
I see. There's nothing but Timbits all over the place here. They got to do something about the birthday cake Timbits. I find them very hard to eat. And I mean, I like sweets. You know, Derek, you know me. I like my pastries. I'm all about pastries. No, they're not. They're not those Portuguese custards. I'm all about my pastries. But man, the birthday cake.
Natas.
Birthday cake Timbits are awful. Travis is claiming they didn't use the card. But anyhow, the birthday cake Timbits are awful. There's got to be something they can do with that. Why can't they do like a maple cream-filled Timbit? Something like that.
Surely they have at some point. That sounds...
I'm just saying. I'm tired of the birthday cake Timbit. It's not the same. Boston cream's not the same as maple cream. Anyhow. How'd I get started in that? Oh, yeah, because Barker brought Timbits in. Baseball Central will be on at 11 today.
He's raring to go.
With Barker. He's got his Bundesliga picks ready. He's even got a clip he wants.
He's doing show prep now.
He is doing show prep. That's scary. Actually, no, it's not. It's actually kind of nice. Let's bring in Jeff Merrick. He's host of Hockey Central, the NHL and Sportsnet, CHL and Sportsnet, Merrick versus Wyshynski. He does the junior stuff. And if you want, he'll come over and clean your eaves troughs. How you doing?
Jeff, Steven, hello. How are you guys? What is this show prep you speak of? I'm not familiar with this phrase.
Well, you work with guys who do loads of show prep, don't you?
Yeah, I kind of try to surround myself with a lot of them. That way I don't have to actually do it myself, Steve.
Yeah, that's the best strategy, believe me.
Man, greatness borrows, but genius steals. Always remember that.
That's very true. I like that. Before we talk about the greatest, the day Leafs fans have been waiting for 364 days. Before we deal with that, we've got to talk about the hockey game we saw last night. It's all about Sidney. It's all about Ovi. Sidney, I mean, if he did much, I didn't see it an awful lot. Ovi had seven hits. He had four shots on goal. Of course, TJ Oshie was the story of the game. But, you know, I'm watching that series, Jeff, and I'm thinking to myself, oh, yeah, this is going seven.
I hope so.
It's great hockey.
It's great. I mean, I think the best hockey we've seen so far in the playoffs is San Jose and Los Angeles. And that was exciting, but it was also crisp, and it had a precision to it. Yesterday was rock and roll.
Mm-hmm.
Yesterday was like messy, awesome rock and roll with big hits, questionable plays, glorious goals, a little bit of controversy. Like yesterday was, like, if you're a fan of chaos in hockey, like, that was your game last night, wasn't it? And
yes.
the nice thing about yesterday was, and you're always sensitive about, okay, are they going to try to, you know, align matchup here and keep the best players away from each other? Barry Trotz yesterday and Mike Sullivan had the Ovechkin line going right up against the Sidney Crosby line, and they had the Bonino line going right up against the Kuznetsov line. Both coaches said, you know what, I'll put my best out there against your best. Let's see what happens. I love hockey like that.
Mm-hmm.
And a dramatic replay at the end. The replay system works, right? You know, because, you know, again, yeah. I know it was called a goal on the ice, so but you would have needed the evidence to overturn that, but still.
Correct.
Man, I'll tell you, I didn't think it was in. I didn't think, watch. And until that one kind of remarkable shot the television shot, I would have bet $1 million that puck wasn't in.
One of the questions, though, this is the one question that I had. How could the official make that call on the ice that it was in?
I don't know. Yeah.
Like that's a weird one to me. It's like, well, if it's inconclusive, then the play on the ice stands. How could you call it in the first place? How could you see that?
Maybe he's really good.
That's the thing that I guess he has X-ray vision. Now, those X-ray specs in the back of your old Marvel comics, I guess it paid off some 30 years later. But I said to myself, well, how can that call on the ice be that it's a goal? Like, we had to go, you know, to your point, we had to go out the door and around the block to find an angle that sort of remotely showed that this thing was over the line. And he's playing on the boards at the goal line. How does he see that thing is in? I don't get it.
Yeah. No, it's – look, I have a lot of issues with the way video replays being used for offsides and all that. Me but, too. You know what? I have no problem with goals. I really don't. And I've kind of come around –
You gotta get it right. You gotta get it right.
Yeah, you gotta get goals right. You absolutely have to get goals right. You know, I was one of those people that thought, well, I kind of like the debate, you know, and all that stuff. But yeah. The more you think about it, I'm fine if you, especially in the playoffs, but at any time, you've got to have replay for goals. You got to get the goal call right. But the other stuff you don't need. I mean, I'm sorry. The other stuff to me is just you're giving the coaches another weapon to slow down a game.
I don't disagree. But the thing is, too, I mean, that speaks more to the nature of the coach's challenge video review than the automatic video review where, you know, honestly, every goal is reviewed.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, every goal they have a peek at. So whether there was this thing, this beast that we're all learning to hate now called the coach's challenge or otherwise, that goal still would have been reviewed. And all we can do is improve the technology, right? The crossbar cams, all that. Like, that's all you can do. But I'm with you guys. Like, the one area where I am comfortable saying, I will pause the game. I'll hit a speed bump here and wait to see what the call is on goal.
Yeah.
Don't give me the offside.
No.
Don't.
Hey, Jeff, you talked, and you were right. I mean, that first game was very much rock and roll. If it continues like that, how does Sidney change his game to adapt to it? Because I think if it continues like that, Ovi's going to be – I mean, Ovi's – he may not finish the series with 9 goals or 10 goals, but I think Ovi can stand out in a series like that, can't he? I don't know about Sid.
Yeah, he sure can. Well, the one thing that I think if you're a Penguins fan, you take away from this is that, you know, to your point, Crosby didn't have his best game, and they took, you know, this team with this dynamic power play and this, you know, ultra offense into overtime, where the Nick Bonino line was the only line that seemed to really be getting things done for the Pittsburgh Penguins. They were on the road, and they took that team to overtime and really stretched them. So if you're a Penguins fan, I think you take some solace in that equation. The interesting thing about Crosby, too, and this is where it may just play into Sidney Crosby's hands, is he likes it when it's messy. Like, he likes playing in traffic.
Right.
That's a great thing about Crosby. He doesn't want to be a guy that shoots from the perimeter. Like, you look at that Nick Bonino line, right? Carl Hagelin and Phil Kessel, they like a lot of room. They like to stretch out the ice. You look at all the pucks they throw in front of Hagelin and create foot races. Kessel likes to, you know, streak through the neutral zone and get a pass on the rush. Crosby is, you know, closer to Peter Forsberg than he like that. He wants to go right into traffic. And if you're going to have a messy rock and roll type game, the likes of which we saw yesterday, I know it wasn't Crosby's finest performance, but to me, that kind of plays right into Crosby's hands. And the interesting thing about last night as well, as much as we talked about how this is going to be the power play series and both coaches will be happy just to play 50-50 hockey 5-on-5 and then dine out on the power play, 0-for-6 on the power play yesterday. That probably won't stand up, and we'll see some dynamic power play situations for both sides, but I thought it was quite remarkable that in the 7-puck game, we didn't have a power play goal.
Jeff, in the other Eastern series, this is, you know, the spring. And I know it shouldn't be a coming out party for John Tavares, because John Tavares has been really good for a while, but there is a sense, I think there is kind of a lot of people being forced to acknowledge just that you know, he belongs on that short list, at least the elite scorers in this league.
One of the top 5 players in the NHL.
Exactly, yeah.
And you're seeing it. For my money, and again, I know it was against the Florida Panthers, but the Florida Panthers controlled play in that series and probably should have beat the Islanders were it not for John Tavares. For my money, Stephen, he's been, for my eyeballs, he's been the best player in the playoffs so far.
Yeah, so how far, I didn't think they'd beat Florida. How far do you think he can carry them? Because it's, you know, we are, I think if you take him out of the mix, I'm not sure they were a better team than Florida. I don't think they were, and I don't think they're a better team than Tampa.
Yeah. Thomas Greiss has been outstanding, too.
Yeah.
I mean, you can't do it unless you have the goaltender, and, you know, ask the Florida Panthers how they're feeling right now. And as much as that was about John Tavares, and he was just fantastic, a lot of that was about Thomas Greiss, too. And even that first game against Tampa, a lot of that was about Thomas Greiss, and even on the triple, a goal in the third period, he's right there fighting. Like, I don't think that anyone really knew that Grice had this in him, considering the last time we saw Grice in any type of pressure situation, you know, he was falling down playing for the Coyotes and squandering their playoff opportunity. So I think, you know, going into this one, we all thought, okay, doom and gloom, no Yaroslav Halak, this is going to be awful for the Islanders. And now I think we're saying, you know, even if Yaroslav Halak is able to come by for game two, can you even put him in net, considering how well Thomas Grice has played?
No, I think you don't make that. You don't change that in midstream with when you got a hot goaltender in the playoffs. That's foolish, right?
That the whole idea of you can't injure yourself out of your spot when it comes to the playoffs.
Forget it.
Yeah, you throw that in the wastebasket.
Yeah. Of course, Saturday night will be the NHL draft lottery, and that will be exclusively on CBC. Coverage beginning at 7 p.m. If you're listening to the Jays and Rays on Sportsnet 590, the Fan, Jerry Howarth will have you covered, by the way, updating you on the first overall pick and all the Canadian teams. And then after the game, you can tune into Sportsnet 590 The Fan for a special live edition of Tape to Tape with Ryan Dixon and Garrett Joyce. That's at 10 p.m. As we said, this is the night that Leafs fans have been waiting for a long time. This is the thing, along with, I'm going to admit, along with William Nylander and Mitch Marner and Morgan Rielly, this is kind of the carrot that's been dangling in front of Leafs fans, although they've been battered over the head for the past the past year. What if they don't get that first pick overall?
It's okay.
Okay.
It's okay. Like, I know this, they have the best chance, a 20% chance, but, you know, that's 20% against 80%, which is the rest of the field. Mm-hmm. I'll take the field with those odds, thank you very much.
Yep.
But even if they don't, and even if they fall to fourth, you're still going to get a really good player. Because if you're someone that has a center position bias, certainly you want number one. Because that's Austin Matthews, but you know Patrick Laine, Jesse Puljujärvi are two dynamic wingers that are nice. I guess if you call them consolation prizes. They're real nice players, and perhaps to me the whole draft hinges on number four, because pretty much everybody has the top three locked. Like every scout that I talk to from various teams, Eastern Conference, Western Conference, it may mix a little bit between Puljujärvi and Laine. Austin Matthews is locked in pretty much as number one. But everybody has a different number four, whether it's going to be, you know, whether it's going to be Matthew Tkachuk, whether it's going to be Pierre-Luc Dubois, whether it's going to be Olli Joleviak, whether it's going to be a surprise player who jumps up, Mikhail Sergachev of the Windsor Spitfire, someone like that that you really love. Everybody seems to have a different opinion on who should be number four. That, to me, in a lot of ways, guys, that's where the thinking has to start.
Mm-hmm.
If you're a general manager, 1 to 3, okay, that's the layup. You really need to think when it comes to number four. And if the Maple Leafs end up number four, listen, man, they got Mitch Marner at number four. And last time I checked, it looks like there's no way he's going back to London next year. At times he looked bored in the OHL. That's how good this kid is. There'll be a really good player available at four, which is, of course, the worst case scenario for the Toronto Maple Leafs if all you're gunning for is Austin Matthews.
You know, I've read in a couple of different places that there are people who think that Patrick Liani could be moved to center. Are you hearing that from scouts as well? Or
they like him as a shooting winger from what? But here's the distinction that I've been told. This seems to be consensus from scouts when you're judging Puljujärvi and Laine, who will forever be linked in this draft. If you want a winger who's good on the rush, then Puljujärvi is your guy. If you want someone who's dynamic, wants to play, sets up in the offensive zone, who has an insane release, like Tarasenko-like, if you want someone with that type of release and is a dynamic goal scorer, then Patrick Laine is your guy. That's the distinction. But I think that, you know, the idea of making him a center just because it fills a need probably doesn't do a service to Patrick Laine at all.
Jeff, you know, all number ones are not created equally. Just go to Edmonton. You can watch a bunch of them at the same time. You know, they're not all the same. What is Austin Matthews? Is he a foundation piece for a franchise? Is he going to be a great complementary player on a good team? I know it's a bit of a crapshoot projecting, you know, 18-year-olds, except for the guy who went last year. Yeah. I think everybody kind of figured that one out. But what actually do you think he is?
He's the number one center in the NHL. I mean, he's, you know, if his birthday was a little bit earlier, he would have been in the conversation for number two. I still would have defaulted to Jack Eichel myself, but there are plenty of people, Stephen, that I've talked to that would have said, you know what, we would have really given Austin Matthews a lot of consideration if we had number two last year and he was eligible. So he's that kind of player. Call him Jack Eichel light, a slight sliver behind where Jack Eichel was last year in the draft, but, you know, make no mistake about it. This guy is a first line center, Whether he's going to be, you know, Joe Thornton, who knows? Whether he's going to be Ante Kopitar, who knows? But this guy has first-line center skills written all over him.
Is he, and physically, you know, he's because of where he's been playing this year, but would that suggest that he's more NHL-ready for next year than a lot of guys would be at that age?
That's a fascinating question because he does play on the bigger ice surface when he played this year in Switzerland. I know a lot of scouts much would have rather have seen him. You know, I know he didn't want to go play in Everett with the Silver Tips, but I think for a scout's eye, I think they wanted to see him play junior hockey just to see how he played peer on peer and on a smaller ice surface. But everything that I've been told from people that have watched him extensively in Switzerland say that, you know, the physicality shouldn't be a problem for Austin Matthews at all.
Jeff, let me ask you this. Now that he's gone to Switzerland, he went over there as the consensus first pick. He's come back as the consensus first pick. As you say, I'm sure scouts probably would have rather seen him peer and peer, but the fact is he was able to do that. He's come back healthy. He's going to, you know, be in the draft. Do you think that Europe will become more of an option for guys?
Austin Matthews was really a very, very specific case because, you know, he just missed the draft by a couple of days. So he was already 18 by the time the professional season started in Europe. So he wouldn't have been able to go and work there if he was 17 years old, and normally guys are 17 for their draft year. So he needed to be 18 before the season began, and because he had that late birthday, he was able to go and play for Switzerland. So I think perhaps you may see another player here or there try it, you know, make $500,000, put that in your jeans, and then come back and, you know, you're still playing high-level hockey, but it has to be a very, very specific circumstance. Namely, you have to be 18 years old by the time the season starts over there, and that's clearly not the majority of the guys.
Mr. Merrick,
you have to be an elite-level talent too, right?
Yes.
Forget about that.
No, very true. Jeff, thanks so much for doing this, man. It was good talking to you.
Yeah, thanks, boys.
Jeff Merrick is host of Hockey Central, the NHL and Sportsnet. Merrick versus Wyshynski podcast, CHL and Sportsnet. He's everywhere.
Everywhere, indeed.
And that was a great deal about junior hockey.
Yes, indeed.
And again, the draft lottery Saturday night exclusively on CBC. Coverage starts at 7 p.m. The Blue Jays and Rays game will be on Sportsnet 590 The Fan, and Jerry Howarth will have you covered, updating you on the first pick overall and all the Canadian teams. And then after the game, Ryan Dixon and Garrett Joyce, they've got a pretty good podcast, Tape to Tape. They will have a special live edition of their podcast at 10 o'clock, starting at 10 o'clock on Sportsnet 590 The Fan. Get you all caught up.
Do we know who's representing the Leafs at the lottery? Who gets to be the happy guy?
Brian Burke.
No, he is actually going for Calgary.
He's going for Calgary, which
is fantastic.
It is great.
Because all things of Brian Burke are great. Yeah. So that
he'll probably get the first pick overall.
Well, remember the year he didn't get Sid when he was in Anaheim?
And then he was going to trade for John Tavares. Remember that?
Uh-huh. He will add to the entertainment value one way or another.
He certainly will. He'll have an opinion.
But I'm interested to see, intrigued to see who the Leafs put forward from their, you know, their many-headed organization there. Could be any number of people.
Yeah. We're going to be here Monday. We're just going to sit down, open the phone lines. It's either going to be balloon streamers, party favors, or we'll just ask people, was it worth it now that you got the fourth pick overall? But I think, you know, honestly, I mean, Merrick's right. And the more, you know, and especially guys like Michael Tracos and Zeisberger and Rob Longley, I've been reading a lot of their stuff lately, and they've talked to a lot of scouts about this. And you really get the sense that Patrick Laine is not a bad number two.
Yeah.
And he doesn't fill your need at center, but you really get the sense from scouts that, hey, you know, this is – The gap between him and Matthews isn't as big as the gap between Connor McDavid and Jack Eichel. And Jack Eichel's pretty good.
Jack Eichel's pretty damn good. And you know, and it may be that Austin Matthews is Jack Eichel. So you know, we've got to move this whole thing.
No, that's true. Yeah. That's true.
But I think as long as they get one of the first three, it's almost a guarantee you're going to get a very, very good hockey player. And you know, at four, you're going to get a guy who may be a very good hockey player. But you know, the kind of the failure rate as you move down that scale gets higher.
And I'll tell you one thing, you know, if the Leafs really want to, I mean, if they really want to speed this thing up a bit, I know a few other people have talked about this, but with all the draft picks they have, I mean, they might be in a position to go after an RFA.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
You might be able to go after an RFA. And I don't pretend to know the depth of the RFA pool this year, But, you know, if you can get a relatively young guy, that's going to cost you a couple of picks. Well, you've got a couple of picks to give up. Anyhow, it's going to be, you know what, it really is. It really is going to be a fascinating offseason. And I think for a lot of Leafs fans, Saturday is the day.
It's opening day.
Saturday, it is. Saturday is essentially the start of the 2016-2017 NHL season for the Toronto Maple Leafs.
Yes. That's not, you know, it's not ideal, but at least it's something.
It is indeed. Speaking of drafts, now, I mean, I don't even want to get started in this because I'll go off for 20 minutes and I'll lose my voice, but the NFL draft last night, and I mean, I got to admit, I went online and I saw the tweet, including the video of Laremy Tunsil wearing a gas mask and hitting the bong. And, you know, my first reaction is this could have been 3 years ago, could have been 2 years ago, could have been two nights ago, whatever. But I'm sitting there thinking, okay, this obviously is going to affect the guy's draft status. I mean, because it's the NFL. You can do just about anything, but a video of it doesn't exist. You're okay.
Yeah, again, I think the other thing would be, and again, it's hard to know how it got there, right? Yeah. Again, there's some weird stuff with his stepfather and things.
Yeah.
Like, you know, what would cause you to question the kid's judgment would not necessarily be that he smoked weed at some point, but that he posted that.
Yes.
The day, the night of the draft.
And then, of course, we find out that
it would appear he didn't.
He says his account is hacked. Yeah. But, you know, my first thought was, okay, here you are. The draft is like half an hour away. And I'm wondering, what the hell does his agent do? Like, how do you, is there any type of damage control anything you can do here? Joel Corey is the NFL writer for CBS Sports and the National Football Post. He's also a former NFL agent. And Joel Corey joins us on the Jeff Blair Show with Stephen Brun. So, Joel, I'm going to ask you that. What goes through Laremy Tunsil's agent's mind when this happens?
First thing you're thinking is, how does something like this happen? And then you're trying to quickly get all the facts of the situation you can from your client, for him to be candid, tell me everything you know. And then you start calling NFL teams and try to explain the situation, what happened, and assure them that this is an isolated incident. He is going to mature, and this won't be something that happens again. Now, personally, my money's on the stepdad. The stepdad filed suit the day before the draft, so it's not a leap to think this is the stepdad trying to sabotage the kid. But this is the strangest thing I've ever seen in terms of someone's draft stock falling.
Imagine trying to do that.
You don't have the lead time like with Shane Ray.
Yeah,
right.
Where he he was arrested on a Monday. And then you had basically the rest of the week to try to spin things positively. But it's not, you can't put it in the Lyle Collins situation because there wasn't a death involved, even though he was eventually cleared of it, but not in time for him to be drafted. It's still bizarre.
And you know, I mean, we know that a couple of teams, at least anecdotally from reporters, we know that a couple of teams, the Baltimore Ravens apparently took him off their board, the New York Giants. Could have used offensive line help. They didn't take him. They went for Eli Apple instead. How much money do you think this ended up costing him? He went 13th overall to Miami. But how much money do you think this ended up costing him? And by extension, Jimmy Sexton, his agent.
Well, let's assume that he would have been the first tackle taken, and everything else before that would have gone according to plan. That Joey Bosa still goes third. So he goes where Ronnie Stanley goes, to Baltimore at number 6, supposed number 13. Over the 4-year deal, that's an $8 million difference in those contracts, essentially. So that's a pretty good chunk of change to be losing. And then if the agent's charging the maximum 3%, and that doesn't necessarily happen on rookie deals because you don't have much negotiate anymore under the rookie wage scale, then you're talking $240,000 for the agent. That's what he's lost.
How do you think they reacted at Ole Miss last night? It as part of Laremy Tunsil's very eventful day, he went in his presser afterwards. He was appears to have answered a question quite honestly when asked, were you given money? He said, yep, I was given money to pay my mother's electric bill. that kind of I would think that there was some people burning the midnight oil at Ole Miss last night, weren't there?
Oh, yeah, that's a cringeworthy answer for Ole Miss. One, I have to give the kid credit for even speaking to the media afterwards, but he's got to have the foresight and the common sense not to throw somebody under the bus like that. They were already implicated for other things going on at the program, but this is only going to focus the spotlight even more by the NCAA. And maybe that's something these Ole Miss kids do, because Robert Condici, when he was asked about the night falling out the window, he threw Tunsil under the bus by saying Laramie was there too. And
yeah.
That was when he did that, I was like, oh, gee, thanks.
Joel, of the two quarterbacks taken 1-2, do you think one, both, either of those guys will justify their draft position? Are they good enough to justify their draft position, or were they just – you know, it was their year. You know, there wasn't anybody else around who was better. There were teams desperately in need of a franchise quarterback, and so they kind of lucked out in a way.
Quarterbacks always get overdrafted because it's such a quarterback-friendly league, and there's short supply for quarterbacks. So you're always going to see quarterbacks that should go maybe 10, 11, go in the top five. And we saw Christian Ponder go 12 a few years ago. Then EJ Manuel go 16th when he didn't need to be going that high. But typically when you have quarterbacks go high, you probably got about a 50% chance of getting it right. So one out of the two I think will be pretty good. I don't know which one. And the other one of those two teams is going to be disappointed most likely.
Yeah.
What was the biggest surprise to you in the draft?
I thought Miles Jack would go someplace in the first round despite the need. Well, the obvious answer would be Tunsil, but I'm taking it out of the equation.
Yes.
But that means that knee must be a lot worse than everyone suspected, or teams are just that risk averse. And then him saying the day before the draft, I'm going to need a microfracture, doesn't help things. If teams hadn't drawn that conclusion yet, or that's not what their doctor saw, why would you point that out? You're better to keep your mouth shut or put a positive spin on that and say, I think I'm going to have the career I was going to have before I had my knee surgery last year, and just leave it at that. So I don't know if there's a disconnect between the agent telling the kid what to say and the kid maybe going off script. But sometimes, as we've seen between Tunsil and Miles Jack, that you can't answer every question overly candid.
Joel, it was great of you to join us. Thanks so much.
Oh, thanks for having me, guys.
Joel Corey is an NFL writer with CBS Sports and National Football Post, and also a former NFL agent.
Well,
and that was —
people don't watch offensive linemen all that much, you know.
No.
But this kid, for the rest of his career, you know, it's sort of like Michael Orr, because you know, somebody wrote a book and made a movie. You know, that this kid is going to have a level of kind of attention and spotlight that not many left tackles do, just because of that, of what happened last night.
It's bizarre. And the guy who went third overall, Joey Bosa, he's got his own issues.
Yep. Yep.
He's suspended for marijuana use and academic. I mean, you know, I hate to say this. When somebody says to me, bad guy, got some academic violations, I'm going, really? I just assume they all have academic violations. Like, seriously, if I'm going to drop a guy off my board, or you know, lower him on my board, hitting the bong and academic violations aren't going to be the top two things.
Yeah, although the
but it's the NFL.
And the counter argument would be, you know, last year everybody was the Johnny Manziel thing, right? Tumbling down the board, he's got character issues off the field. You know, now there are people who debated his skill set too for the NFL, but you know, do you think the teams that passed on Johnny Manziel were right? You know, he doesn't appear to have the maturity to do much of anything.
Yeah.
So, you know, sometimes those things can be significant enough that they get in the way of somebody's athletic ability. And in Manziel's case,
I'd be more concerned about dude having a Confederate flag behind him.
Well,
I know it's in Mississippi, yeah. Right? So Ole Miss, that's the school symbol. But anyhow, we appreciate Joel Corey joining us. It's going to be it could be a historic weekend in the Premiership. Leicester City with a win at Old Trafford. And even though I'm a Manchester United fan, I'm cheering like hell for Leicester City. If they win at Old Trafford, they will win the Premiership with three games to spare.
Mm-hmm. And I think there's a formula because with Spurs, and Spurs play Monday, is that
yeah.
right? So Leicester Sunday, Spurs Monday, right? So that it's a 3-point.
Yeah.
Yeah. So any combination of results. Equaling 3 points. But yeah, they can win it outright simply by winning at Old Trafford.
Have you ever seen anything like this in sports?
This is one of those, you know, yeah, there are upsets and there are underdogs and there are surprises.
Yeah.
But the one thing that you could bank on absolutely is that in the Barclays Premier League, in a sport where there's no salary cap, where money matters,
yeah.
that a big club will win every year.
Yes.
And that everybody else is fighting for the crumbs, right? Whether
it's
to stay
like
up.
That in other leagues.
Yeah, it's just, again, the outliers that might, you know, make finish fourth or something. Yeah, that can happen or, you know, creep into your Europa League spot. But for a team that was on the verge of relegation last year to win, you know, that's Buster Douglas over Mike Tyson. That's
yes.
what that is.
Yeah. Totally.
You know, and except that Buster Douglas over Mike Tyson over a course of a whole season,
yes.
you know, not just one night.
And that's the thing. And we're going to be joined in a few minutes by Rob Harris, a global sports reporter for the Associated Press, who is based in England. But the other thing is they've been leading forever.
Yep. No, it's almost wire to wire.
Yeah, this isn't oh my God, they went in this unbelievable. That they just haven't lost.
No, look, you can fluke your way into a lot of stuff in sport. You can have a great night. You
yes.
know, you can stumble, you know, even something like a knockout competition like the FA Cup,
yep.
right? You can kind of fluke your way to the FA Cup in some ways. Yeah, you know, just have a bunch of, you know, because.
Or the Euro, like Greece in 1 year.
Yeah, exactly. An unremarkable team can get on a roll and, you know, yep. but to do it over the course of a long, it's like, you know, it's like we talk about in baseball, 162 games. There's no flukes over 162.
No.
But there's no flukes over the course of an entire Premiership season.
No.
You know, they're playing those big clubs. They're playing all of those guys. They're playing home and away.
Yeah.
It's an absolutely level playing field, except for the fact that they've got way, way less money than everybody else, or not everybody else, but the guys at the top.
It really is a remarkable story. They were 1,500-1 odds at the start of the season. Rob Harris, global soccer writer for the Associated Press, will join us. It's the Jeff Blair Show with Stephen Brunt on Sportsnet 590, The Fan.
Subscribe to our radio shows at iTunes or with your favorite podcatcher. Do not settle. Demand. Sportsnet 590 The Fan on demand. Now more of the Jeff Blair Show on Sportsnet 590 The Fan.
Actually, Barker spends enough time. But why don't you come in here for the soccer segment? We've got a soccer guy on, Barker. You can come in.
Yeah, you know, he's a Bundesliga specialist.
I don't think
he does the BPL.
Oh, we got a surprise for you today, though. We're going beyond the Bundesliga today. We're going to drop some knowledge on you today beyond the Bundesliga. It is a Jeff Blair Show with Jeff Blair and Stephen Brunt. Sunday, Leicester City has a chance to wrap up the Barclays Premier League with a win at Old Trafford. This, of course, raises the delightful proposition of Claudio Ranieri, their coach, and from all accounts, just a wonderful, lovely man, being able to go to Chelsea with the championship already in his hands. And Chelsea's owned by Roman Abramovich, who fired Claudio Ranieri at one point, saying he didn't think that he would ever be able to win a title with a big team. Well, he was right. He can't win a title with a big team, but he might be able to win a title with a small team.
It'll be just as heartwarming if he goes to Chelsea and wins, though, right? Everybody feel the same. Those plucky underdogs at Stamford Bridge.
Oh, it would be great. Yeah. It would be great. But, yeah. I mean, this is going to be interesting because, look, Manchester United's got – they're fighting for a spot, get into Europe next year. A lot of us who are Man U fans, you know, I don't care if they go to Europe or not. I really don't. Quite frankly, I don't want anything to happen that's going to keep Louis van Gaal around for another year. But I do know this. I would love to see Leicester City win. And you know what? Even as a Man U fan, if they do it at Old Trafford, God bless them. And I guarantee you that if we get to a point in that game, late in the game where they're leading, I guarantee you the Old Trafford crowd, they're gonna have some Manchester United fans spurring them on at the end. I think if there's a sense that they've got a sniff of this, because I mean the great thing if you're Manchester United that you may not have won, but nobody else you hate has won either. Arsenal, they haven't won. You know,
yeah,
Liverpool,
that's true.
They haven't won.
Yeah,
City, they haven't won.
Yeah, no, that's true.
So it's great. Anyhow, Rob Harris is the global soccer writer for the Associated Press. He joins us on the Jeff Blair Show. Rob, other than Spurs fans, is there anybody in the planet who doesn't want Leicester City to win this?
Well, I don't think a team like Chelsea should be really wanting Leicester to win it, because it really exposes their shortcomings and the shortcomings of many others. The fact that a team like Leicester can upset the odds so spectacularly to go to win the title for the first time. But I think generally across the board, there are fans across England just reveling in their achievement, because I think many people see it will be a one-off, so why not sort of join in the unusual and unique nature of it. Although we kept on saying throughout the whole season the fact that they would surely fade away, they would slip up. So when we do say it's a one-off, maybe it won't be.
Right. As we approach the finish line, as you say, Rob, everybody spent the entire season saying, well, this won't last, this can't last. Now that we're with inside of the finish line for Leicester, do you have an answer as to how the heck this happened? You know, because that is going to be a question, might be a question for the ages.
Well, yeah, I think generally this will be a question that will probably still be being asked in decades to come. It's something the team and members of it always talk about, the teamwork, the team ethic, and the unity. But it's got to be something a lot more than that, the way that they've been well-drilled by Ranieri, a man who was just completely written off when he arrived at the team and was being derided. He was sacked by Greece the previous year. He was a complete complete flop in terms of management stakes at that point in his career, having sort of failed so spectacularly early on in the easiest qualifying campaign ever for the Euros. So, when we look at how they've achieved it, one advantage they've had is very few injuries. They've managed to keep the team together for most of the year without many changes. Ironic, given the fact Ranieri was known as the team man at Chelsea a dozen years ago when he was there. But even with Vardy being suspended last weekend, and they still swept to a 4-0 win and managed to cope without him. So there is a great team ethic clearly there, and they're well drilled by Ranieri. The big test will be next year in the Champions League.
But Rob, it's not like there's a formula evident here, right? Like if we're going to say, well, this must give hope to mid-table teams in the future, because they'll look at the Leicester formula and they'll do that and they'll be able to compete ever occasionally. But I don't know what the ingredients of that formula are. I can't break it down and say, well, this is how they did it.
Well, I mean, they've been very successful sort of mounting counterattacks, having very little
possession
in games, and being able to exploit opponents like that and not being found out or particularly a way to stop them. There are other advantages. Key decisions have gone their way and not gone the way of rivals, and maybe sometimes you actually just need that full slate of decisions from officials to be on your side. You know, even the day Jamie Vardy was sent off when I was there for the West Ham game, they still produced that injury time penalty, which they equalised from out of nothing. You know, when everyone had sort of written them off, you thought they're going to lose their first game in a few months here, and they still pull it off.
You know, Rob, one of the other things that I think really strikes home with me about this team is, you know, I look at their midfield. I look at N'Golo Kanté. I look at Mahrez, you know, playing farther forward up, admittedly. But I look around the Premiership, and so many of the big teams, I would say maybe with the exception of Spurs, have had issues trying to figure out what to do in the midfield. And it appears as if the real strength of Leicester, I shouldn't say there, I mean, Jamie Vardy's a strength, don't get me wrong, but I watch that team, and I'm watching Kanté, and I'm watching Mahrez. Those guys, to me, are the strength of this team. They're almost the ever-present, along, of course, with Huth and Morgan in the middle. But I just think that their midfield might be the best midfield in the Premiership. I think that's what it might come down to.
Yeah, and there's certainly a great strong discipline in that midfield. There's also with the attacking flair as well going forward. And to remember, someone like Mahrez costs them less than £500,000, which reminds us, it tells us a lot about how you recruit players from across the country and indeed Europe. When you're looking at talent, you see so many teams. You look at Chelsea, they needed a new striker. Who did they go for? Falcao last summer, even though he'd had a sort of completely useless sort of previous year at United. Whereas Leicester sort of looked lower down. Vardy was signed from the non-league, and Mahrez was signed from the second division. They just looked beyond the obvious, scouted around, and it shows you there is talent that isn't just already playing for a top team or already a big name, and you extract value out of that as well, and you can build around a team around people who aren't, who've got something to prove as well, and they're not already established, and they really need to sort of fight for their place in football. And now you've got Mahrez, who's the player.
Not to be a downer about this, but if you look ahead, Rob, to the 2016-2017 Leicester. You know, obviously Ranieri is going to be gone, but what's they're going to be in Europe? They'll have some more. There'll be some more cash flow for them, but they're going to get pillaged, aren't they? What's that squad going to look like next season?
Yeah. Well, it's interesting. Well, I expect Ranieri will still be there. It'll be interesting to see how interesting decision for him really to win the league. It would almost be the best moment just to leave, and you know, that's a great way to end of his career. But I'm sure he does want to lead them into the Champions League. And it's fascinating to see if they do keep hold of all those players, and the game has changed in England now, and we saw it with John Stones and Everton last summer. They were able to hold on to John Stones in the face of intense interest from Chelsea, offering huge sums. Leicester will be earning next season in the Premier League alone more than £100 million from TV and prize money, even more if they finish right up there again. They'll should be earning sort of £30 million plus from the UEFA for being in the Champions League group stage. So the significant income coming into a team that hasn't been used to such vast income. So they do have the financial muscle to be able to resist the overtures of the bigger teams. And you know, if you are a player like Vardy, you think, well, can I achieve something with this team, or do I want to go to Chelsea where there's yet another new manager in Conte coming in, instability. This year at Chelsea has shown the fact that things can easily sort of fade away. And if you are at the peak of your career, you want to take full advantage of that. So Leicester, I believe, it could seem the attractive option to build from.
I was also going to say, Rob, that the other thing too is we've seen in the case of Vardy and in the case of Conte, these are two guys who've been able to play their way onto their national team at Little Leicester, which has got to help as well.
Well, indeed, and it also exposes actually how players at other teams who might be on sort of vast salaries or a traditional big name club aren't getting the game time, and then there's a risk of them losing their place in the team. Yet, actually, by choosing the sort of lesser option, or so it seems, and you get the game time, you establish yourself. Look at Dele Alli at Spurs. If he joined another team, would they have sort of put him into the team so early? He's now 20 and named Young Player of the Year and set to go to the Euros or England as well. You know, if he had joined at Chelsea, would he have immediately been thrust into the starting lineup, or might have sort of had to kick around and been sort of developed away from the first team? So, you know, there are teams like Spurs and like Leicester that will give those opportunities, and it shows you have an immediate pathway into your national teams and to a major tournament. Whereas, you know, I'm sure 2 years ago, Jamie Vardy couldn't have imagined being a starting option for England.
It's going to be a great story this week, and it's going to be a great story when it plays out. Rob, thanks so much for joining us. Always a treat to talk to you. Take care.
Well, good to join you.
Rob Harris is the global soccer writer for the Associated Press. Be a great job.
Yeah, it would be a heck of a job. But and I say this is one of those week. You know, maybe it should be this weekend. It might not be, but it's one of those things. You know, just kind of enjoy it. If you like soccer, and even if you're not a great football aficionado, this be one to tune in for, because
I'm trying to.
You're not going to see it again.
No, and you know what? And I know I think you're doing a column. You're going to write something.
I'm going to write off it. Yep.
I don't know if I can come up with a North American comparable.
No. Well, because number one, all the leagues here are cap leagues.
Yeah.
Right? So,
baseball,
and baseball's not a cap league, but baseball.
The Marlins that one year, right? Remember the Marlins had a small payroll and they beat the Yankees.
Yeah, I guess. Yeah.
But that's not.
It's just that the system there is so weighted.
Yeah.
And again, the entire history of the Premiership since it's existed, there's only been a handful of sides that have ever won, and they're all those sides, right?
Yeah. Well, and it's not just that, too. It's not you know, in the case of the Marlins, they had good young players that came through. These are guys who are
spare parts,
yeah, for the most part. It's great. You'll be back Monday.
I'm sure,
we'll talk about this, and we'll be able to talk about the draft lottery as well. But now it's time for Baseball Central with yours truly and Kevin Barker.